You may proceed.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the court, and I would ask to have 3 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
I am Russ Stone. I'm here today on behalf of my client, Tavon Gilden, who was convicted in Rico County Circuit Court of a number of offenses. The only ones that are really at issue in this case are a charge of carjacking. My argument is fairly simple and straightforward. The evidence in the case established that Mr. Hilton, with force, took the victim's car keys and then walked away.
In the vicinity of the car?
In the vicinity of the car, absolutely. And that's important for me, that the victims were right next to the car when it happened.
So at the moment that happened, he didn't acquire constructive possession over the car. He had full control over it when he had a gun in one hand and a pair of keys in the other.
I don't think that he did have full control over
the car. Constructive possession.
Constructive possession of the vehicle?
Yeah. He has the key. He has the owner at gunpoint. He doesn't have constructive possession of the car?
I don't think he did have constructive possession of the car. If nothing else, at that point, possession of the car is in dispute. The victims are still standing next to the car. If you look at some of the other cases...
With a gun pointed at him.
What's that?
With a gun pointed at him.
Exactly.
There's not a lot
exactly.
of dispute going on there.
He committed a robbery of the car keys. He absolutely committed a robbery of the car keys. But he did not commit a carjacking. That's exactly where my argument goes. There's no question that at that point, he committed a robbery of that set of keys. That was not charged. But for carjacking, and I think it's important to remember exactly what the carjacking statute says.
It says intentional seizure or seizure of control.
Exactly.
So what is seizure of control if it's not putting a gun at someone's chest, taking their keys right by the car? That's not control.
How are you controlling the vehicle at that point?
You've got a gun to the vehicle's owner, and you have a key to the vehicle.
But you make no effort whatsoever to do anything with it.
Well, you can abandon all sorts of criminal enterprises before you can consummate it. He didn't jump in the car, but he abandoned it and walked away.
Well, and with all due respect, Judge, in every other carjacking case that's ever come through the Commonwealth of Virginia, they do jump into the car. That's part and parcel of the carjacking statute.
Would we have to overrule Bell to rule in your favor?
I don't think so. I think that
because he drove away in the car.
In Bell, he did drive away. That distinguishes it from this case. And I'm not asking the court to overrule Bell. In fact, I crafted an instruction in this case based upon some of the language in Bell. Bell specifically notes that not every time a person takes keys and takes the vehicle is it carjacking.
Right, I mean, if you take someone's purse, keys happen to be in there, okay. But here, it was pretty targeted behavior.
But again, the language in Bell was not every time a person takes the keys and takes the vehicle. So if you take a person's purse, keys happen to be in there, but then you jump in the car and drive away in the car, you have committed a carjacking. There still has to be some sort of nexus to the vehicle, is what I'm arguing. Now, of course, Bell is a court of appeals case. Spencer's Court of Appeals case, I don't know other than Overby, which is cited in here, and that has some difficulties that I'm sure the Commonwealth's going to point out. I'm not sure that this court has ever addressed the issue before. So obviously you're able to do whatever you like, but what I am asking you to do is not expand carjacking law in Virginia to the point that it was done in this case, because there's no sense in doing so.
Can I ask you this? 58.1, though, the debate is constantly using the term possession, just as I just did, constructive possession, and things like that. But the statute says control, seizure, or control. Why would you say that if all you meant as a code writer, physical seizure of the vehicle, you're in it, you're driving down the road? Why would you say control of the vehicle?
I agree, and I do think that that means there might be some circumstances where merely taking the keys is sufficient, but not in this case where the defendant clearly, after taking the keys, all of the evidence, every bit of evidence in the record is they walked away.
He changed his mind. Well, give me a hypothetical where taking the keys is sufficient for seizure of control.
It can be. It can be.
Okay, give me a hypothetical where it can be. In which it is not consummated by intentional seizure of the vehicle, which is the disjunctive part of the test.
If you take the keys and make an effort to seize the vehicle, but for some reason that effort is thwarted. You know, it's different from what you have in this case, because in this case, the victims were actually put back in the car. They were sitting in the vehicle as the defendant walked away. And that leads me to another argument, another point I want to make, is do we define control of the vehicle solely by whether or not the person had the keys?
I mean, no,
is your ability to operate a motor vehicle solely defined, or is your ability to control the vehicle solely defined by your ability to operate that vehicle?
Well, let me just ask you this.
Have I lost control of my vehicle?
If someone said to you, I lost control of my vehicle, and you said, well, how did that happen? And they said to you, because someone within feet of the vehicle pointed a gun at my chest, took my keys. Wouldn't you say, putting aside all legalese, well, you definitely lost control of the vehicle?
I would want to know what happened after that. I honestly would. I understand where you're trying to go with that, but in this case, after pointing the gun and taking the keys, the victims are sitting in the car and the defendant walks away.
Well, we have a dozen cases on abandonment. Once a crime is consummated, it doesn't matter that the defendant abandons the consummation of the crime.
I think that's stretching the law of carjacking beyond where it is, if we're just going to say that at that very moment, and none of the cases, even the ones Bell, Spencer, even the ones cited by the Commonwealth, none of them actually say the very moment the keys are taken, that's when the carjacking is occurred. There has to be additional facts.
This is my last question then. Suppose, another hypothetical, not your case, you're conceding nothing. Suppose, here are the facts of the case. The defendant comes up, puts a gun in the owner's chest right by the car, and takes his keys. And 1 second later, a cop on the beat sees it and arrests him. Is that carjacking?
If the other elements of carjacking are met, it certainly could be.
Well, just that hypothetical, given the facts I've given with no other evidence, is that carjacking?
Well, you need to, what I mean by that is there's intent written throughout the statute, so there has to be an intent to take the vehicle as well, whether or not taking the keys.
Okay, could a reasonable jury infer intent to seize control of a vehicle at the moment in which a defendant puts a gun in someone's chest right by their vehicle and takes their vehicle cars? Could a jury reasonably infer from those facts alone that seizure of control of the victim's vehicle has been consummated?
Under those facts, probably.
Okay, so it wouldn't matter in that case that the guy changed his mind 2 seconds later and tells the cops, I was not really actually going to jump in the car, I was just doing this.
Based upon those facts and the facts that we don't know what's going to happen because the officer under your hypothetical stopped it from happening, I think it would certainly be reasonable to say that. In this case, we don't have that, though, because we know what happened after the fact. We know they walked away. They put the victims back in the car. The victims were defending the car with a shotgun in this case. I don't think it's the same thing. There is no evidence upon which...
Maybe that's why the defendant abandoned his ongoing crime, as he realized he'd taken it a little too far.
I think that's a stretch based on the facts.
Well, the victims chased him with a shotgun. The victims chased him with a shotgun.
Well, exactly. But they were walking away before that happened.
Well, they were there to rob him of this fake or whatever car...
Right.
Purchase.
Exactly. I'm not here to tell you that I have a sympathetic client and that my client's upper citizen is here. What I am here to say is I don't think he's guilty of carjacking, and to find him guilty of carjacking is expanding the law of carjacking in a place it's never been before that could lead to some really absurd and illogical results. If we're going to say that merely taking the keys to a vehicle by force constitutes a carjacking, I've laid out a scenario in my brief where a person trying to prevent a drunk driving incident could be guilty of carjacking. And there's no sense in going there when they could have charged robbery of the keys. Putting them in the car probably could have been an abduction. Ordering them at gunpoint to get back into the vehicle, that would qualify as an abduction. There are plenty of other things that could have been done here that the Commonwealth chose to go with carjacking, and it's not supported by the evidence. The second argument that I've made on my brief is that during the course of this trial, everything we've been talking about, if it was obvious that's what the issue was going to be, whether the keys standing alone is enough to convict somebody of carjacking. Based upon the law, and Bell and Spencer and other cases of that nature, both the Commonwealth and the defense proposed certain instructions. I put forth an instruction that is set forth in my brief, basically based upon Bell versus Commonwealth, that said, you cannot find from the taking of the keys alone that the defendant is guilty of carjacking.
Can I ask you a question?
Sir.
Because you keep talking about the taking of the keys alone, but that's not what the facts are they? I mean, it's the taking of the keys while you've got a gun pointed at somebody and they're outside of the car.
Well, that's what I mean, and then the question is... I concede force.
Given that totality of the circumstances, is that sufficient for us to say that the person who had the gun and the key had constructive possession of the car?
I submit no.
And then that's you know, that's the pinch point in the whole thing.
I agree. Right. And if you look at the Spencer case, the facts of the Spencer case, I think, are significant.
Can I stop you one more time?
What's that?
If we do conclude that that person had constructive possession of the car and control of it, then it would be proper to find them guilty of carjacking.
As far as my first argument, the sufficiency argument, yes. If you find he's in constructive possession solely by taking the keys, then yes, I think this is...
Taking the keys while he's holding the gun on the owner.
I agree.
You know?
Second argument that I have raised is that I put forth what I submit is an accurate statement of law that went directly to the issue that was before the jury, that the jury had to decide. The judge refused that instruction. And I submit that that was error, and it should be error that should get us a retrial as to the carjacking case. The instruction was three sentences long. First sentence said that you cannot find solely from the taking of the keys that the defendant's guilty of carjacking. That's an accurate statement of law. I said that it could...
But I guess the interesting thing about it is that's not the factual situation. It's not the instance where the guy is just like pickpockets him and takes his key while he's, you know, walking down the street or something.
Well, it's all in the context of the facts.
Exactly. So, I mean, why would you talk about one fact? Should there also be an instruction? If he took the key with a gun pointed at the person, it could be.
I'm conceding force. I absolutely concede force. Force is conceded. So every time I say the word taking, I'm talking about taking by force under these facts. But the taking by force in and of itself does not make someone guilty of carjacking. That is my argument. If you disagree with that argument, and then, you know, if you feel the judge was correct, but the cases don't hold that way. The cases from the Court of Appeals that have been cited. And... Well, is there any more questions? I know I have
2 minutes and 20 seconds.
Thank you, Judge.
Good morning, Judge. Please, the Court, Aaron Campbell, on behalf of the Commonwealth. The Court's already seized upon the dispositive issue, at least with the first assignment of error, is that is whether or not the defendant seized control of this vehicle. I will point out that's how the jury was instructed, is whether or not the defendant actually seized control of the vehicle. I think it's actually helpful to look at this case in three moments. One, before the keys were taken. I think the defendant pretty much concedes on brief, and I don't think there's any dispute that the victims had control of the vehicle at that moment. And then, two, after the keys were taken but before the victims were put in the truck, I think that is really the dispositive time that I think the Court needs to focus on. And then, three, after the victims get into the truck, that's who has control of it. Then I don't think that matters at that point. I think what matters is when the defendant pointed the gun at the victim and the keys were taken, that the defendant at that point had constructive control over the victim's vehicle. And under I know this is an unusual case because it didn't take the vehicle, but under the statute, that's all you have to prove is that the defendant actually seized control over the motor vehicle. And we would argue that when that happened, when the gun was pointed and the keys were taken, and that at that point the victims, they didn't have the ability to actually defend themselves be able to get back in the car until they were instructed by the defendant itself to get back in the car. And at that point, they didn't even have the keys. They couldn't even drive away. I will point out one thing, that carjacking is a species of robbery, and we have a long line of robbery jurisprudence that says when there is a seizure of personal property of some sort, even for an instant, that's enough to constitute robbery. And I would say in this case, the minute or so that the keys were taken and the guns pointed at the victims, I think that is enough under the language of the statute to constitute carjacking. At least a reasonable fact finder could find that the defendant was in control of the vehicle, however brief, by virtue of pointing the firearm and taking the victim's keys. As for the jury instruction issue, point out there's no dispute that the model jury instruction that was given fairly stated all the elements of the crime. Broadly, they were that the defendant had to seize control and that he had the requisite intent. The problem, I think, with the defendant's proposed instruction is that it improperly limited the consideration of the taking of the keys to that second element, just the element of intent. It didn't allow the jury to consider whether or not the taking of the keys was a seizure of control or constructive possession of the vehicle.
Well, this statute has a lot of ors in there.
Yeah.
And if you diagram this thing, basically what you're saying is reduced to its essence. If you have the keys to his car and you have a gun on him, at the very least, you've temporarily deprived him of control.
Yes, sir.
Well, it seems to me that's the best argument you've got.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think the defendant's intention was to at least temporarily deprive these victims of this vehicle, which the statute is aimed to prevent. I would submit that the jury instruction that was proposed by the defendant, I think the Court of Appeals was correct to say that this was, if not an inaccurate state of law, it was definitely confusing and misleading, and therefore it was not an abuse of discretion to reject this jury instruction, considering that we have a model jury instruction that fairly covered all the issues. For that reason, I think a reasonable jurist definitely differ on whether or not this instruction is necessary. I think the issue of whether the taking of the keys was really more of a factual issue for the jury to decide, and they decided that the taking of the keys was indeed a seizure of control of the vehicle. And for those reasons, I ask that this court affirm the courts below. If there's no questions.
All right. Thank you very much. Rebuttal.
With regard to the issue of constructive possession, I do want to point the court's attention to Spencer versus Commonwealth, as cited in my brief and the Commonwealth's brief.
Constructive possession, not of the keys.
Constructive possession.
Well, he had actual possession of the keys, right?
Well, I'm sorry. If I said keys, I meant to say constructive possession of the vehicle.
All right, but that doesn't require constructive possession because there's so many ors in this statute. It says or temporarily deprive another of control, in possession or control of the vehicle. So possession, constructive or otherwise, is not a necessary element of the statute.
I agree with that, Judge.
Right.
And it was simply because the discussion of constructive possession was occurring that I was going to point
right.
this out. But yes, I, in my opinion, this case rises or falls on the control question, whether or not the taking of the keys with a gun constitutes control.
So who had control?
That's what I think it comes down.
Who had control? At the moment the gun is pointed at the guy's chest and the defendant has the key, of the individuals at the scene, who had control over the vehicle?
I think at that point they both have control. That control is in dispute, and that's what I said in my brief. If the Commonwealth had charged attempted carjacking, but they have not completed anything.
So he seized control but shared control with someone else? That's not under even your
control. Well, two people have control of the, if it's in dispute, who has control. He has not completed the act of carjacking.
I'm not thinking.
When I'm disputing with someone and he's pointing a gun at me, he wins.
Well, that's probably true. But we're not talking about that. We're not talking about whether or not he's going to tell you what to do and you're going to do it. We're talking about whether or not legally they have control over the vehicle at that stage. And
no, we're talking about whether illegally they have control.
Exactly. As a legal principle, do they have control over the vehicle? They clearly have control over the keys.
If it's debatable, and we have a jury that resolved it, is there anything more we have to talk about?
With regard to that issue,
yeah.
No, sir.
All right. Thank you very much. Call the next case.